Welcome to the Battle Cry Podcast with Convention of States Action President Mark Meckler. You can watch the original live broadcast Sunday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the Convention of States Facebook and Rumble channels.
We have a lot of news to recap this week. It's been a crazy week, but before we do, we want the call to action to go out because, you know, it's good that you listen. I appreciate you being here with me. I love you guys, but I need you in action. Call to action is more important than anything else we can possibly do. You actually doing something to save the country is what really matters to me. Should matter to you too. It definitely matters to your kids and your grandkids and our posterity. So I'm going to start with this. I'm going to tell you to do what I'm doing right now, which is to get involved in your party. Whatever party you're a member of, literally, I don't care what party you're a member of, just get involved. And in order to do that, you need to go out, and I would recommend that you get involved at your local precinct level. Start there. That's what I'm doing right now, starting at the bottom. And so I'm going out and participated in my local precinct convention. And for me, then that leads to a district convention and so on until you get to your state party convention. I am unfamiliar with all of this stuff. I haven't done this in the past. Mostly I'm on the road. I travel a lot, paying attention to national, but I always preach local, right? I talk about you should be involved locally. So I'm going to practice what I'm preaching and I'm getting involved locally. And I hope you will too. Start by looking up what's your local precinct. When are your precinct conventions if they haven't already happened, and go participate. Don't be intimidated. That's how everybody gets started. I honestly have no idea what's going on. So that makes me a little bit nervous to go, but I go. I found out it's not that complicated, right? And as I move my way through the process, I'll learn more and I'll talk to you a little bit about it, about how it works at the local level. At the precinct level, usually very few people show up. That's the way it was at mine. I assume that's the way it will be at most of them. I know there are exceptions, but generally not a lot of people show up. People who do show up generally pretty friendly, and they're going to be excited to see a new face and have you there participating. So if you want things to be better in the country, I hear a lot of you complaining about your party and how your party doesn't represent you. Well, then go be the party. Be the person that represents what you think needs to be represented in the party. I'm doing it and you should too. Now, I hate to start with this news story because I just hate this news story so much, but I'm going to do it anyway. You heard Winston, he shook his head and he's walking out of the room because he hates this news story so much too. And that is President Biden's State of the Union address. And I want to be clear about this. I don't hate it because of his party. I don't hate it because I thought he did a bad job delivering it. I just hate the State of the Union. I just don't like these speeches. I think they are ridiculous. I don't think we need to do them. I think they really are just political advertisements for whoever is in office, whether it's Donald Trump or Joe Biden or whomever is in office. And I think they're full of pomp and circumstance that's not befitting our constitutional republic that seems more like a monarchy. Everybody waits around for the president to come in. He's announced with pomp and circumstance. He walks down the aisle. Everybody shakes his hands. I don't like it. It just makes me very uncomfortable. So I actually try not to watch them. I'm kind of forced to watch them now, right? And I'm forced to watch them because I'm supposed to comment on them. So I have to see them. So I did watch this one. So I'm going to give you my commentary. And again, it's not based on party or particular politics. This is just my kind of overall read. Now, the first bar that had to be cleared was everybody says that Joe Biden is declining mentally, or a lot of people do. I think we've seen a lot of evidence of that. I have to say, he didn't look like that at the State of the Union. Clearly seemed to me that he was jacked up on some kind of chemical concoction, but I thought he pulled it off fairly well. And what I mean by that is he managed to pull off a one-hour speech at a level of high energy, frankly, in my opinion, a lot of times too much energy, a lot of yelling, but he pulled it off. And that was the bar that he really needed to cross, was he needed to look competent. He needed to look like he wasn't suffering so badly from dementia that he couldn't lead the country. And I actually think he cleared that bar. And I know there are people who might disagree with me. Some of you might be angry with me for saying that, but I try to call him like I see him, not on a partisan basis, but on a balls and strikes basis. And I thought he did a decent job of delivering the speech. And by that, I mean, he delivered it with energy and with vigor, befitting the office. So he pulled that part off. I thought the tone of the speech was very ugly and aggressive. A lot of yelling, kind of weirdly, a lot of yelling. Apparently, I've read out there from a bunch of people who've now seen the prepared text that there was something like 87 exclamation points included in the text. And I think he did a lot more than that. But this is done for a reason also, you need to remember, which is what networks are going to pull out of that speech, what media outlets are going to pull out are sound bites. And so it gave him a chance to make sure that almost all the sound bites sounded cogent and enthusiastic and excited and full of energy, all the stuff that he needs to project. So I thought in that way it was successful. I thought the speech was very divisive, and that's been sort of his nature throughout his presidency, was to divide off MAGA Republicans, as he calls them. He went after the Supreme Court in a way that I thought was really bad for our system, unpresidential. I don't think the president standing at the podium should be criticizing the Supreme Court. Frankly, if I were the Supreme Court, I don't think the Supreme Court should even be in attendance at the State of the Union. But they were, and he attacked them. I didn't like that part. I didn't like much of it, but I thought he was very aggressive on the Supreme Court. I thought the place where he got into the most trouble was when Marjorie Taylor Greene started shouting out that he needed to say the name of Laken Riley, and or Laken Riley. I apologize. I don't know how her first name is correctly pronounced. I've heard it both ways. I don't mean any disrespect there. And the president picked up some kind of silver medal. I don't know what that was. And he said that he said Laken Riley. So he got her name wrong. Her name's not Laken. I didn't pronounce it correctly necessarily either, but I'm also not the president and not expected to know that stuff. So he said Laken Riley, and he said she was killed by an illegal. And this is interesting because that's a term that normally conservatives use, or term that Republicans use, calling illegal immigrants illegals. And the left hates that term. And they went after him for it after the speech. So he tried to sort of blunt criticism by naming the victim of that recent murder by an illegal immigrant. But then he called the illegal immigrant an illegal, properly, in my opinion. And he got vilified by the left for that. So sometimes you just can't win. And in that one, I thought he really got into trouble. And you could see him kind of stumbling as he tried to interact with Marjorie Taylor Greene and some other Republicans that were kind of heckling him. I'm not a big fan of the heckling at these events, but it showed his inability to handle things on the fly. So I think that was the one place where maybe his feebleness of mind showed through. Overall, really didn't like it. Like I said, I think it's torture sitting through them, whoever speaks them. This one, I disagreed with a lot of the policy positions. So for me, it's particular torture. Whatever you think, I just find them torture. And then there was the response, and that response was by Senator Britt from Alabama. I have to admit, she's the youngest woman or youngest person I think ever elected in the United States Senate. And I have to admit, I didn't even really know who she was. So I feel a little bit bad about that, a little bit ignorant about that. I guess I don't know all the senators by name. I thought that she presented well in the sense that she seemed smart and she seemed that she could speak well, or I should at least say read a teleprompter well, attractive. I thought she looked good on camera and did as good of a job, generally speaking, as you can do with one of these things. It was a very hard setup. You go from all the pomp and circumstance of a joint session of Congress being addressed by the President of the United States to, in this case, Senator Britt sitting in what looked like her kitchen by herself. I don't like this format. I think it makes it really difficult for whoever follows the president. Again, regardless of party, makes it very difficult. Most people have failed in this regard. It's been a real stumbling block for folks on the right who've accepted the challenge. I think it was Sarah Huckabee Sanders that did the last one. Might be the only one that I thought was done really, really well. Sarah Sanders did an extraordinary job on that. So we saw Senator Britt do it. I just thought her facial expressions and her phrasing and her hand movements weren't natural. It seemed overacted. I don't know if that's because she was nervous. I don't know if they told her to use her hands more than she normally does. She was smiling at times that didn't seem appropriate to be smiling. I just thought it was kind of weird. So I would say that the rebuttal was kind of a fail. And I don't blame her. They usually are. It's an incredibly hard place to be. So you've got Biden on the one hand. I think he crossed the bar and did okay in regard to showing, at least for that moment, that he was cogent. And I didn't like the substance. And then you have Katie Britt. I probably like the substance more than I like the form of it. Not that well done. So I'm not sure she did herself or the party any favors. All right, let's move to some other stuff because I just hate talking about State of the Union. I hate watching him. I did it for you, by the way. I took a bullet for you. All right. The next story I want to talk about is something that's good news. I try to bring you guys good news every week because, as you know, I believe there's a lot of good news happening out there. This is a good news story on the cultural front, and that is that Tim the Tool Man, Tim Allen from Last Man Standing and from the Santa Claus movies, which are all good, wholesome movies and shows, he's tooling up a new show on ABC. And yes, that was an intended pun. Sorry, I know it was bad, but he is tooling up a new show. Here's why I think this is a good thing. The show is apparently about a guy who works in a shop and owns a shop restoring cars. I think this is good news because you can be sure that Tim Allen is not going to do a show that's full of cultural rot. It's this show that's on ABC, which means ABC is acknowledging that there is an audience for stuff that's not garbage. And that means, my friends, that you and I are winning in the culture wars. They're having to produce things that appeal to people like you and me, people who don't want to see all the culture rot that they have on most of these shows. So I don't know what it's going to be, but I'm definitely going to watch the show. I'm going to be paying attention to this coming out. Another piece of good news on television, and it just depends on whether you like this kind of stuff, I guess, but it is also wholesome TV. Chip and Joanna Gaines from Fixer Upper, they are tooling up a new show as well on their Magnolia Network. Now, that's one of the most successful, if not the most successful, home improvement show in history. And it went off the air after 10 years. It just went off the air because I think they were tired of doing it. It was hard on their family. They followed that with a single season show fixing one property in Waco called The Castle. I found it really compelling and fun. I like that kind of TV. And they have a new one coming out called The Lake House, where they're going to do an entire season on rehabbing, you might guess, a lake house. Why do I think this stuff is good? I think it's good because it's just wholesome, right? It shows a married, loving, well-balanced Christian couple with a bunch of kids engaged in a commercial enterprise, right? A business, a successful business together as a couple. And that's good. And we should like seeing that kind of stuff in the culture. We should like supporting that kind of stuff in the culture. And one thing I really love about that is it is not putting conservatism or religiosity or politics, conservative politics in your face in any way. Cause the show's not about that. It's just that those people exude all of those things, Chip and Joanna Gaines and Tim Allen, right? They exude just normalcy. I mean, I think this is a big deal. What we're shooting for is not MAGA, but what I call MANA, M-A-N-N-A, Make America Nearly Normal Again, MANA. And the reason I say Make America Nearly Normal Again, because America's never been a normal country in the historical sense. We've always been an outlier, but we want to go back to America's normal. So MANA is something that we need every day from God, right? And so I say that the new slogan should be Make America Nearly Normal Again. And I think these shows are an indicator that that is starting to happen in the United States of America, and you should be glad about it. You should be happy about it. In more good news, and again, there's a lot of good news. I want you guys to pay attention to the good news as well as the bad. You get all the bad news from everybody else. Women's Pro Golf, the next league, NXXT, that's a league with a lot of money behind it that was made to compete with the PGA and the women's PGA. So the Women's Pro Golf Next League says it is banning biological men from competing. This is great news. They did have a biological man competing as a woman, you know, in his little fantasy world and doing pretty well qualifying. And what they did, which I think is a great way to go, is they polled their members, the women who were actually golfing, to find out whether they wanted this to happen in women's pro golf. And apparently their members said no. And so they're putting in a rule banning biological males from competing in the next league golf. Okay, I don't watch golf. I admit it. I don't play golf. I never played golf because I didn't like being away from my family that much. And it's expensive. It's just not a hobby that I ever took up. I don't watch it on TV, but I would be more likely to watch the next league because they did this than other leagues that might not ban women. Every female sports league should ban males from competing. And by males, I mean biological males, you know, people who are born males, the only kind of males there are. And while we're on that, let's talk about the language around the trans stuff. First of all, people say you're denying trans people. I get this all the time. And my answer is, yeah, that's correct. I am. There's no such thing as trans people. They don't exist. You can't transition from one gender to another. So there is no such thing as trans. That's a made up thing. Now, there are people, there are men who believe that they're women. Genuinely, they have a psychological disorder, gender dysphoria. There are women who believe they're men. Same thing. It's a very, 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 very tiny percent of the population. And they should be treated psychologically. They should receive the treatment that they need to try to make them more comfortable in the genders in which they're born. The vast majority of people who pretend to be the other gender, people who say they're trans, those people are perverts. They're people who have a fantasy, a perversion, that they are the other sex. They love that. They get sexually aroused from that. It excites them. Men who pretend to be women, who think they're women, is called autogynephilia. I don't know what it's called for women who pretend to be men. But this is just a perversion. It's a sexual attraction. They get off on it. So you got men and women who pretend to be men and women. That's a form of mental illness also, in my opinion. The fact that they want to act that out in public, they expect you and I to go along with it. I'm not going along with it. You shouldn't go along with it. That's not cruel, by the way. That's called reality. And you should never let anybody talk you out of reality. That is the ultimate power. If they can get you to say things that aren't true, if they can get you to say men are women and women are men, they're getting you to say something that is a denial of reality. And then they control your mind and they control everything about you. And you should never, ever go along with that. CVS, on the other hand, wants their employees to go along. CVS, the giant pharmacy chain, the big corporate pharmacy chain, they've now gone full DEI. So I guess that means I found another place not to shop. I like this. They're actually cutting down my options. And I love the fact that they're cutting down my options, because I'll go to places that don't go full DEI until there are no more of those, right? Then I'll have to pick the least worst. But CVS is a pharmacy that I used to shop at. I quit shopping at my local CVS for the most part because they're inside Target. Where I live, there's one really close by inside Target, and I quit shopping at Target a long time ago. I'm happy and proud to say I haven't been back since they went full trans and tuck bathing suits and full pride and all that stuff. I just don't shop there anymore. So now I have a reason not to go to the CVS pharmacy at all. Participants in their DEI program were actually asked to audit their own biases and pledge to become allies in the service of diversity, equity, and the inclusion agenda. And then they had to go through this whole test. They had a gender identity or an identity wheel they had to spin, and they had to identify which gender identities they think about, which identities they think about more than others. This is a sickness. This is a disease in our society, and it needs to be cut out of our society and thrown away. DEI needs to DIE. And so to CVS, I say, I'm out. I'm not coming back ever again. And it doesn't matter. You can get rid of this stuff. You can stop doing this stuff, but you made the decision. You lost a customer for life. I'm right in your sweet spot for your market, and I'm never coming back again. So I think I'm switching to Walgreens or whoever else is not woke. It's hard to know who's not woke these days, right? All right, what's up with COS? COS still on the move in Idaho, still on the move in Iowa. We are facing opposition there. And I have to say something about the opposition in both Iowa and Idaho and other places around the country. Look, the left is absolutely united against Convention of States. It's led by Common Cause, which is the George Soros organization. It has 250 signatories. If you go to Common Cause's website, you can read all the propaganda against COS. Just look up Common Cause Convention of States. One of the things you're going to find there that's going to blow your mind is you're going to find that among the people there are like La Raza and MoveOn.org and Planned Parenthood and the Socialist Party of America. It's pretty much every single radical leftist, baby-killing, America-hating, communist-loving, socialist-loving, big government, statist group in America is aligned against COS. And then, weirdly, you got a couple of fringe groups on the right that joined them. And when I say join them, I want to be really clear, because they say some stuff that's very untrue about us. I don't ever want to be dishonest about them. When I say they join the left, I don't mean they're working together directly, but they do use the exact same talking points. They do often get held up by the left as groups on the right that are against COS. And that's the John Birch Society. I call them the J BS because they say so many things that are dishonest. I have to challenge them all the time when I'm in states and they lie about us. They lie about me directly. So the John Birch Society, important to remember the history of the John Birch Society. The John Birch Society started as an anti-communist organization back in the late 50s, early 60s. That seems like a good thing. Ultimately, they had to be literally excommunicated from the conservative movement by the founders of the conservative movement. Russell Kirk, Barry Goldwater, William F. Buckley led the charge, Ronald Reagan, all of these people, icons of conservatism, founders of the conservative movement in the United States of America, chased the John Birch Society out of the conservative movements and back into the hills where they belong. Unfortunately, they've come out of the caves fairly recently. I think a lot of them came out during the Tea Party movement. Tea Party was looking for people who loved the Constitution. I think they love the Constitution, but for whatever reason, they've decided they hate Article 5. They're very dishonest about it. They say that their organizations never supported the use of Article 5. They have very extensively. It's well documented. You could look it up on the web yourself. And so those groups, the John Birch Society and Eagle Forum, opposes Convention of States around the country. Really frustrating stuff. They are definitely in league with the radical left on this stuff. So if you meet people who say, oh, runaway convention, and you meet people who say, oh, Mark Meckler is supported by George Soros, you'll hear that, believe it or not. You may want to ask them why they're using the talking points of the radical left. And you may want to point them at Common Cause's website. Now, you're also going to see, if you go on Common Cause's website, you're going to see an article by a guy by the name of John Malcolm, who works at Heritage Foundation. And he was skeptical of Convention of States, and they have him up there as somebody in the conservative movement who was skeptical of Convention of States. And I love John Malcolm. I've known him for a long time, by the way. And now what you will find out is that he's switched his position. He's completely in support of Convention of States. Heritage Foundation, where he works, is completely in support of Convention of States. He did his homework. He spent the time. He watched what we were doing, and he switched his position. And so basically every major institution in the United States of America that's conservative, that's spoken about this issue, every individual that's a major nationally known figure, generally speaking, have spoken against the issue. I've spoken in favor of Convention of States and against this idea of a runaway convention. So which side are you on? You got to ask yourself, right? Which side are you on? Are you with this radical leftist group, the baby killers, the America haters, the Marxists? Or are you with Convention of States who are trying to restore the Constitution by using the Constitution? I think you wouldn't be watching if you weren't for us. Also, a shout out. I got to give this shout out to Right Wing Watch. They've been attacking me and Rita Peters, Rick Green, for being apparently crazy far right wing folks. Yeah, we are right wing folks for sure. So shout out to Right Wing Watch, because I know you guys watch this all the time now. I'm really excited that you're watching, that you're spending your money watching me, watching us. Keep it up. We'll give you more to watch. All right, we're going to move along to Ask Mark Anything. You can email to battlecry@cosaction.com if you want to ask a question. First question today is from Albert Stern. Has any state ever successfully seceded from the Union? If they ever did, would they be a separate nation or distinct like DC? Albert, nope. Nobody ever has successfully seceded from the Union. If they did, if they could successfully do that, I presume they'd be a separate nation. They would not be a district like DC. DC is a distinct district within the United States of America. Alex Gallimore asks, who do you think Trump should pick as his running mate, and should he do it soon? Man, that's a hard question. I would say if I had a very first choice, my first choice would be Kim Reynolds, the governor of Iowa. I think she's just smart and solid on policy. I really like her. I think she's a true blue conservative. We pick her. I don't know. And the reason I say I don't know is because she endorsed Ron DeSantis. So that's a question, but I just think right now, for my money, she's the best in the country to be his running mate. Ann asked, what's preventing this convention from being commandeered by the feds? I'm going to flip that question a little bit, Ann. There's no methodology for the convention to be commandeered by the feds. This is a gathering of the states, and the states have sovereign authority. There's no involvement of the feds in it. There's no authority for the feds to be in it anyway. No states would want the feds involved in it, because it's about the states asserting their authority. certainly the supermajority that called the convention wouldn't want the feds involved. So that's what's to prevent it, is there's no mechanism whereby they could even get involved. If they said, hey, we want to come to convention, the states would just say, well, there's not a role for you in convention. If you look at the Constitution, it says the states are calling for a convention. They convene in that convention. There's no role for the feds in that convention. The feds have their own way of proposing amendments. That's when two-thirds of both houses of Congress propose, goes out to the states for ratification, just like after a state-based convention. But there's really, it's just a weird question. What's preventing the convention from being commandeered? There's just no method for the feds to even be involved, let alone commandeer. All right, that's the last question for the day. I want to promote the Case for Convention of States with Mike Ferris. Great video premiere event that's taking place this coming Wednesday, March 13th at 8 p.m. That'll be on COS's Rumble, X, Facebook, YouTube. I want to promote the COS At Home Mailbag Naming Competition. You can go to www.conventionofstates.com/mailbag if you want to submit a name for that mailbag. We want something catchy and cute and quaint, something that people remember. We're accepting submissions through March 13th. That's for COS At Home's mailbag competition. Go to www.conventionofstates/mailbag. You have a great week. Be positive. Look at the good news. Go get involved in your local party, whatever your party is. You can learn more at conventionofstates.com. Go to conventionofstates.com. Sign the petition. Get involved today. God bless y'all. We'll see you next week on The Battle Cry.
This has been the podcast version of The Battle Cry with Mark Meckler. Visit conventionofstates.com/pod to learn more. Thank you for listening.